Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat. It's a podcast about workplace culture, psychology and life. Hello, I'm Bruce Daisley. Actually, it's just me again because today is just a really timely one-off episode. I've been really inspired by a lot of stuff about workplace culture recently, and it seemed good reason to just put more stuff out. Specifically, I read something wonderful about the culture of Tottenham Hotspur. I contacted the writer and it felt like it was just worth putting out in a timely fashion. They're currently second in the Premier League, and it felt like a good time to capture that. We've got a couple of podcasts recorded with Matt and Ellen, so we'll be back for a fuller episode next week, and that will be the normal cycle of things. Ange Postecoglou has been the manager of Spurs, Tottenham Hotspur, for about 100 days, and in that time, he started something of a transformation. And I can tell that because the Spurs fans I know have just started smiling. Spurs have started the season well. Like I say, they're currently second in the league. But more than that, the players seem to be happy and are playing exciting football. There was a brilliant article by Charlie Eccleshare in The Athletic looking into the culture of the club under Ange. The article talked about how the mood of the club has been transformed. And for anyone interested in the impact that cultural change can create, it was a fascinating read, full of specifics, clearer actions. Aren't we all, to a greater or lesser extent, trying to change the mood of our jobs, trying to change the relationship between how we feel and the results we achieve? I got in touch with Charlie, and that's the conversation here today. We talked about Postecoglou, culture, the impact that culture has on results. In the show notes, you'll find links to Charlie's articles. He mentions a few speeches, and I've included YouTube clips of them. There's also other things that you might find of interest, like an interview with Gary Lineker. Fabulous discussion. For me, I'm sort of a lapsed football fan, really, but I love the stories behind these things. That's why previous episodes about Jurgen Klopp and maybe the All Blacks, sort of any intersection of a good story in sport, for me, is the sweet spot for me. So I'm really grateful. Let's have our discussion with Charlie Eccleshare from The Athletic. Charlie, thank you so much for joining me, because I loved your piece that I read last week. I wonder if you could just briefly introduce who you are and explain what you do.
Yeah, I'm Charlie Eccleshare. I'm the Tottenham Hotspur correspondent for The Athletic. The Athletic, for those who don't know, it's owned by the New York Times, and it's a subscription-only sports website. And the idea is to give kind of in-depth coverage of particular teams and sports and events. In my case, that's Tottenham Hotspur or Spurs. Yeah, so I cover the team very closely. And as part of that, that involves going to weekly press conferences with the manager, Ange Postecoglou. We have them before games and after games. So I've got to know him pretty well over the past couple of months since he's been appointed. So that's me.
Tell me this, even just that insight you give there, do you get a sense of what someone is going to be like culturally? I'm interested in the culture and the cultural dynamics by how welcoming they are to outsiders. Is the very fact that he's allowed himself to become known to you something that maybe would differentiate himself from other people you've dealt with there?
So it's a strange world, football, because they're very well protected. football is such a huge industry. Basically, the bigger the sport, the worse the access is for journalists. And football is the biggest sport in the world. So the access, you know, it can be hard to get to know the managers on a personal level, because the only times you get to speak to them really are in quite an artificial environment where the manager gives a press conference where he's talking, you ask questions, he answers. So in the wrong hands, that can feel a little bit like, you know, you're at school and you're asking the teacher questions and they hold all the power. What he has done, what feels different with him, I mean, first of all, I went on the team's summer tour in July, and part of that was in Australia where Postecoglou is from. And as part of that, we had a more informal sit down with him, which was only a few of us who were there. So I got to know him a bit better then and, you know, hear about his journey and that sort of thing. But even within those press conferences, yes, he shows more of himself, I think, than a lot of managers. He shows his personality. He shows who he is. I think what a lot of them do, a lot of managers are very scared of the media. So they're very reluctant to say anything personal for fear that it might expose them or make them vulnerable or be leapt on. What he does very differently is he is willing to show a bit more of himself. And he has a lot more of a hinterland than a lot of managers. Bear in mind, a lot of these people have only ever really known elite level football, and that is so detached from reality, elite level football. Whereas he's a bit older than most managers as well. He's 58 and he's got lived experience, and that really comes through. And culture is really important to him.
He came in, I guess from the outside, it appears like it's been 5 years of constant change and turbulence. What do you think was the objective? What manifesto did he come in on?
Well, I think, so the big buzzword this summer for Spurs when they were trying to appoint a new manager, which dragged on, it went on for months, so they were without a manager. And culture was one of the big buzzwords.
Right.
It was about someone who could reconnect with the values of the club. And, you know, football clubs, I guess like most organizations, but to an even bigger degree, they have a set of values and ideals that are really important to them. So in Tottenham's case, it's about playing good football. And most clubs have this to an extent, but that, you know, just taking them as an example, they pride themselves on a history of playing good football. The game is about glory. To dare is to do is their motto. And so they wanted someone who could come in and matched up to those ideals, and also who could give younger players a chance. That's another thing the club prides themselves on that had been lost a little bit. But also just, it had become Spurs, his immediate two, well, he had three predecessors, but one of them barely lasted any time at all. But two of them, one was Antonio Conte, one was Jose Mourinho, two of the most successful managers in the game. Both had managed at Chelsea, who were big rivals of Spurs. But they're very defensive managers, and they could be quite abrasive, and it became quite joyless under both of them. So they wanted someone who could come in and just lift the place and kind of remind people that actually football should be enjoyed. It should be fun. And that's what he's all about. You know, he's got this amazing backstory where and again, talking about the vulnerability and, you know, showing elements of himself and modeling and that kind of thing. He was very close to his dad, who died a couple of years ago. And he basically got into football as a way of getting closer to his dad, because he says his dad worked. They were Greek immigrants who moved to Australia when Ange was three or four, very young. And you know, it was hard for his dad. And his dad was quiet, worked till hours, but football was the thing that made him come alive. And so Postecoglou would go along with him to football. And basically because of his dad always wanted to be a player, which he was, and then be a manager. And also not just do that, but play in a certain way.
We were immigrants, right? That's ostensibly what we were. We went by boat. At that time, Australia was looking for immigrants to help them with the workforce. My dad was an unskilled labourer, so we took that leap. We went there. We stayed in a sort of refugee camp for a little while. Within that context, I had a father who, like every little boy, I wanted to get close to, but he was just working all the time, mate. And the only thing that he kind of kept inside of him from the old country was this love of football. He just loved football, and at the time growing up, that was my connection. I loved that, what it did to him as a person, so I wanted to get close to that.
Which was this very exciting, forward-thinking way, because that's what his dad loved. So it's all linked to that. And so it was one of those moments in football, they talk about alignment, which is where a club has a vision, and they, you know, they make appointments that match that vision. And Spurs, for so long, had seemingly had a vision, but then they'd make these appointments So, you know, we love playing good football, but we're going to appoint defensive managers. Well, how do those things connect? Postecoglou finally was someone who did align with those visions, and his whole thing has been about lifting the place, reminding the players and everyone at the club that it is a special place to work and that football should be enjoyed. And I think that had been forgotten.
I really love the thing that you call out, that he'd said he was in an interview somewhere. He said, if you want to change, you have to change, which seems like a really simple thing to say. But I saw someone talking about culture a couple of weeks ago, and they said, you know, the danger of culture is that you treat it as a series of values, but the best way to bring culture alive is a series of actions. Mm. And it sort of struck me that those things were adjacent to each other, that, you know, he was thinking specifically of what actions can we change? What can we do? Can you think of examples that brought that to life?
Yeah, well, something I report in that piece, for instance, before home games, how it used to be was that the players would all stay together at a hotel. It's actually the hotel on the site of the training ground. He came in and basically said, no, the players can stay at home with their families the night before a game, as can the staff. They all have lives, they all have families. Why make them have one extra night away? And obviously the risk there is that, well, what if the players misbehave or whatever? But he was like, I trust them. If it becomes an issue, then yeah, I'll have to step in, but I don't think it will. I think the players will be far better off in their own beds, relaxed the night before, rather than, you know, in an environment that might actually heighten their anxiety, because, you know, they're kind of already in game mode the night before and the game's not starting for another however many, you know, 24 hours or a bit under. So that's one. I mean, another, and that speaks to a consistent theme about empowering the players. Mm. And so he's very much, his message to them and in public has been, you know, the dressing room is their space. They can do what they want. And the idea is that until there are kind of major issues that need resolving, he wants the players to resolve it themselves as a way of empowering them, because otherwise it's just him kind of dictating things. And his belief is that you don't actually affect real cultural change if it's kind of a diktat from on high. So those are just some of the ways he's tried to do all that. And, you know, he named the big thing as well with all of this is they lost Harry Kane this summer. Mm. You know, talismanic figure. He wasn't the club captain. He was actually the vice captain, but he's the England captain. And he was a huge, huge figure, you know, the best player of their modern era. You know, Spurs came through the academy. They lost him, which felt like a massive thing. They also, the club captain has been marginalised. He doesn't really play. They had a leadership group of four players last season. None of them are in this season's leadership group. He's replaced them all with three new people. Two of whom
are quite
a bit young.
Is that because they've left the club?
Well, no, not all of them have. No. Only Kane's left the club. The other three are still at the club, right, but they're just not senior figures under him. So to complete, it's very rare you have that in football. You have so much change in such a short space of time. And again, I think it was just his way of saying, I trust these guys, some of whom, you know, one of them is a young Argentinian guy. I think he's Christian Romero, who's now 24. But it was the kind of appointment that I made this point to people connected with Spurs. You know, it reminded me a bit of at school when the naughty kid is given a responsibility as a way of hoping it will kind of get him on the straight and narrow. And that's kind of what, you know, Romero was very ill-disciplined, was always getting booked or sent off, but he was appointed one of the vice captains. And then another one was James Maddison, who again was seen by some as a bit of a rogue. But actually, you know, Postecoglou has complete trust in him, has made him a vice captain. And those two have shown, you know, great leadership so far. And also Romero is Argentinian, so he's Spanish speaking. There are quite a lot of Spanish speakers at the club, quite a lot of players from South America. So the idea was that he could kind of be a leadership figure for that part of the dressing room. And then Madison's English speaking, is English. So, you know, a lot of, you know, the English players gravitate towards him. And then Son Heung-min, who's from Korea, kind of is seen as transcending all the groups and kind of beloved by everyone. So it's quite, you know, not all organizations are as multinational and multicultural as football clubs. I think that's something that's quite amazing about them. But that was definitely something he was conscious of, that he wanted all the different groups to kind of be represented.
And was there a sense that in the past, that there'd been a lot of complaints or a lot of moaning or excuses? Was there a persistent cloud of negativity over the club?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, And again, some would say that's the players. You know, there was this idea that, well, if Conte and Mourinho can't succeed at Spurs, that's not their fault, that's the players' fault. No one could ever get a tune out of this group. They're idle. They don't like, you know, they're either complaining that training's too hard or that it's too soft. But yeah, last season was pretty toxic. It wasn't a happy place. You know, lots of complaints that Conte's training was boring and repetitive, that he was, you know, volatile. And, you know, I've got two young kids, and something you hear, and my wife's a social worker, and something she talks about with parenting that they talk about in social work is the importance of consistency. And I think that's true also with, you know, managing people in any workspace. And the problem with Conte was he was wildly inconsistent. So he might come in and one day be quite jovial and happy. On another day, he'd fly off the handle. And that's really difficult, I think, for players. It's not a very nice working environment because you don't really know where you stand. Should say as well, he had quite a lot of things going on off the pitch as well, which I think, you know, made it a particularly hard year for him. But for whatever reason, it really wasn't a happy workplace. And something Postecoglou said actually recently was that one of the things he did that's important about him coming in, but also new, they brought in a bunch of new players, as tends to happen with most clubs every summer. And he said the important thing there was for them to come in and remind those players who'd been around that actually this is a pretty amazing club. You know, the facilities are incredible. The history of the club's incredible. But that can be lost when you've got people who've been there for a long time and start to feel stale. But yeah, the mood's transformed from last season.
I was really struck in the piece you wrote about how we often achieve goals obliquely. So what I get, I mean, is that you talked about how Conte had these really strict drills and often training would run on because he was insistent about getting, I guess, these defensive drills or whatever drills right. And they were trying to train that the players were fitter. And yet in the data from the first few games of this season, the players appear to have run more than in previous seasons. They appear to have acted more. And it's almost like they've accomplished those things through motivation that in the past they were sort of being dragged reluctantly and sort of held back to achieve. And it's really interesting how you can achieve goals obliquely, sometimes far more effectively than instructing someone to do them. That really struck me.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And something one of Postecoglou's former players said to me was that you're far much more, because his training's more varied than someone like Conte's, where it was more rigid and regimented. And as you say, it was, look, we need to do this. Let's get to this point and we don't stop until we do. One of his former players was saying that when you're playing for a manager like Postecoglou, you are just more willing, subconsciously or otherwise, to go that extra mile because it is that much funner and you kind of believe in it that little bit more. And I definitely think we've seen that this season. And, you know, other little things as well, you know, just going back to the kind of cultural points, things like meetings now are shorter. They're not so kind of drawn out and I guess didactic. And that's all part of this idea of empowering the players, that it shouldn't be so much like they're getting a lecture at university and it's short, sharp. And a lot of research has gone into this with footballers, and I'm sure it's true of most young people that there is a limit to how much they can just be talked at before they switch off and they don't really take in any more information. And that's certainly something that Postecoglou appears to be conscious of because they're much shorter, these meetings. And training sessions tend to be shorter as well.
Is it a straight line that managers are just reflected in their teams? Can you do a character profile of a manager by looking at their teams?
It's a really interesting question. To some extent, I mean, the managers are held so responsible for what happens, and that's become possibly even more of a thing over the last sort of 5 or 10 years. Like the cult of the manager is the thing. You can certainly see characteristics. I mean, you know, managers who are very, very intense. You know, they set their teams out to play in that kind of way. In Postecoglou's case, he's really interesting because there's a relentlessness to him, which he wants his teams to have, but it is done, to use your word, oblique. You know, it's not in that same, we are going to have to get to this point. It's more just kind of showing up every day and always giving your best and always learning and all of that kind of thing. So I think there are elements that teams reflect their managers, but what's interesting as well is often managers who as players embodied certain characteristics are then quite different when they become managers. George Graham, the former Arsenal manager, is quite an interesting example. He's known for kind of dour defensive football. But as a player, he was called Stroller, and he was kind of, you know, walked about the pitch, quite a cocky central midfielder, I think. So, you know, you can have different qualities once you become a manager. But I do think certainly the kind of attitude and approach and application you see, you can see a fairly straight line in some cases. Or look at Jose Mourinho. You know, he is someone who, very spiky character, and wanted his teams to have that spikiness and that world's against us kind of attitude. You know, because some people like to motivate by kind of telling people that everyone thinks you're crap, and that, you know, everyone wants us to lose. So it's kind of fighting against something. Whereas others, you know, will go for more positive reinforcement. And sometimes you can see that in, you know, some teams might play and want to be more the protagonist. Certainly Postecoglou's Tottenham team are more that, whereas Mourinho is more reactive and they're out to get us, but let's show them that actually we're the best.
Yeah, just the thing that really strikes me is that my friends who support Spurs are telling me how much more fun they're having this season. Just, you know, they seem to be enjoying their experience there. And then the players appear to be enjoying themselves and being more motivated. And then, so it comes down to this really intriguing question, whether actually trying to create enjoyable environments that have got the spirit of motivation at the heart of them, if there's some magic there that we sometimes lose sight of. And from someone who thinks about workplace culture and workplace dynamics all the time, it's just a really intriguing analog, because, you know, is there a teachable lesson in this? And I guess, you know, that's my question for you. Do you think there's a teachable lesson in this? Can other clubs try and create a more enjoyable environment to achieve what they want?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's so hard to know all of this because we are so results focused. So I think, you know, at the moment, Postecoglou, he's at that sweet spot because results have been so good that everyone's bought into it straight away. You know, both the players, the media. So everything he says is seen through the prism of this guy is good and successful. You know, so I really believe in it. When results are less good, maybe, you know, you have less sympathy for that. Having said that, I do think that creating an environment, and it's not it's easier said than done, clearly, but, you know, a fun environment means that some mistakes sort of forgiven. And I think Spurs, for instance, they're going to have bad games this season. They just will. But I think there'll be a lot more of an acceptance of those because they're trying to do things in the right way as far as the fans see it. And I think the players as well will be more willing to keep fighting for a manager where, you know, because they're humans, you know, where the atmosphere is fun and enjoyable. And they've come from those Conte, Mourinho periods where it just stopped being fun. And that does make it really, really difficult. So I do think across the board, people should, especially in an industry like football, where it should be fun. You know, yes, there is the suffocating pressure, but ultimately you are doing something that most people would love to be doing. Same for me covering the sport. And you have to remember that sometimes. And my boss is really good at saying, you know, that as much as, yes, it's serious and important, but don't forget to have fun with it, you know, because it should be. We're really lucky to be doing this job. And that's probably true of quite a lot of industry. You know, I often think it's a shame that sort of the funnest sounding industries often actually, when you speak to people in them, are the most stressful and, you know, and often the biggest brands that you think, oh, wouldn't that be cool to work for brand X? And then you're like, no, it's got a really toxic working culture because people are so pressured and institutionalized and have no perspective. And that's where Postecoglou's upbringing is so important, because for him, he says this a lot, you know, we have a responsibility. There are going to be people out there coming to watch who have stuff going on in their lives. They might be struggling at work. They might be struggling at home. It's our job for 2 hours to give them some escapism. That's what we're here to do, because that's what football gave him and his dad and so many people from that Greek community in Melbourne all those years ago. And I think, yeah, not losing sight of those things is really important.
Yeah, it really strikes me that through everything you've said, the importance of momentum to some extent. Like, you know, to start in a different way without a break, you might immediately find that, you know, coming from a club like Celtic initially could have been the thing that people were laughing at now. you know, that he didn't have elite team pedigree. But a bit of momentum on his side and a good environment, it just strikes me that there is a degree of luck about getting these things exactly right.
Yeah, although what's interesting is he started quite slow. Celtic, where he was previously, yeah, he was a huge success, won the league both seasons there, and they absolutely loved him. He actually started quite slowly there, and when he managed in Japan in his job before Celtic, whereas this time he has come in and just like ridden this wave. And I think it helped, you know, something that's been suggested to me, one of the things that's helped him almost was that the players were so miserable by the end under the previous manager that they right. were particularly willing and to quickly embrace the changes, whereas they might not have been if, you know, let's say they'd loved their last manager, but he'd moved on because he'd been offered a bigger job or whatever. Then there might still be people saying, well, actually, I loved how we did things under manager X. Whereas they were like, yeah, very, very happy to try something different. And I think with momentum, I mean, momentum is so huge in sport, but it's also then how you kind of ride that wave. And he's doing that really well. And I would say to any, you know, go and have a look at the atmosphere at the ground. It's amazing. It's just completely transformed. You know, last year was a really miserable place to be. Fans are just angry and upset. And now they believe again. And the scenes after each victory is just joyous, and that's what sport can do, and that's his point, I suppose.
The thing that's really come out throughout is that, you know, whether it is communicating the purpose, you know, of what the team's for, or communicating to the team that he wanted change, that word communication just comes out all the time. And is that what we're looking at, that, you know, the big differentiator between these people who are just able to land something and the people who struggle, is that art of transferring something from our heads to put that idea in someone else's head? Would you summarize it as communication? What do you think, if you had to be reductive, what's the one thing that differentiates this guy?
So I've done a piece actually on his oratory, because I think it is such an important part of who he is. And for it, I spoke to a public speaking expert to sort of get a sense of kind of where Postecoglou's rhetoric sits amongst, you know, people we think of as speech makers and that sort of thing. And I also spoke to a lot of his former players who, because he's given a lot of team talks that have almost gone viral. They're so inspirational. His communication is so important. And that actually was a big part of the Spurs managerial hunt this summer, was getting someone with good communication who could articulate a message, get people on side, partly because Conte and Mourinho had been really bad at that. Mourinho is interesting because he's a great communicator in lots of ways, but he just, the message he was sending out just didn't sit with the players, didn't sit with the fans. It's so important for Postecoglou. And again, I would sort of seek out to get a sense of this, some of his team talks. I mean, he gives this amazing one where he's talking to the Australian players. He was managing the Australian national team at the time. And he's saying to them, basically, think about the one person who made loads of sacrifices so you could get here today. Think about that one person. And he models again. He talks about how, for me, that person is my dad. And then he says, because tonight when you go out, they're there with you. And so we're actually going out there with a much bigger team. It's not just 11 people. All those people who've been with you on this journey, they're going to be out there with you too.
So we're game day boys, yeah? So when you walk out today, just think about one thing, right? You think about the person in your life, as I've always said to you, it could be your mum, could be your dad, could be your brother, sister, uncle, grandfather, partner, friend, coach, somebody in your life that when you started believed in you more than anyone else.
Well done, Trent!
That when you said, I want to play football and you were passionate about it, they're the ones that made the sacrifices, they're the ones that pushed you. That when people said to you, you're not good enough, they're the ones that picked you up and said, no, no, you keep going.
Oh, bad luck. Come on, Jack. Oh.
Think about that person. Think about how that person's going to feel when we win tonight. When they're at home and the text messages start coming through to them and people ringing them and people sharing the experience with them. And when they wake up tomorrow morning in Australia and everyone wants to talk to them, they'll feel like it's them that's achieved it. And you know what? It is them. Because that's who you're walking out with tonight. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. He's a hard man, my old man. Still is today. But he's the one that kept saying to me, no, you can keep doing what you're doing. You're going to love this game and you're going to make it to the very top.
And players who were there say it was just like amazing moment and really just made them so motivated and want to go out there. With us in the media, he's just very empathetic. He talks about a range of topics in a really interesting way. And, you know, he just says, he just gets it. That's the thing. I think fans can recognize a fraud and they can recognize someone who understands it. And because he is a fan fundamentally, you know, that's how he got into it. He's able to articulate that message. And, you know, recently after they won a game, they won it really, really late on against the team they should have beaten, Sheffield United. But, you know, and he was asked, because it's such a thing in football, what you always say after a win is, you know, we're not getting carried away and, you know, one game at a time, da, 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 da. But he said, no, let the fans get carried away. Let them dream. Let them enjoy it. You know, that's what it's about and things like that. It's like he has a direct line to the supporters. And I think, and like I said before, a lot of managers see the media as kind of the enemy or at least something to be treated with a lot of caution. Whereas he sees the potential in kind of public speaking and what it can do for your standing with the fans and also with the players, because, you know, they're going to be aware of what you're saying publicly, but also what he says to them behind closed doors, the team talks he gives. It's really interesting. I'm very interested in communication and speech making and always have been. And so having Postecoglou as my sort of muse to be able to sit there and listen to is genuinely like it's fascinating. You learn so much from him in every press conference, whereas often press conferences can be very formulaic, artificial feeling events where you're just asking, you know, is X player injured? Why is player Y out of form? You know, that sort of stuff. Whereas with him, you know, I was able to ask him about you know, mental health recently because one of the players had said they were suffering and he gave really thought-provoking answer on that.
Who in their life doesn't have something that's stressful? I mean, I've lived 58 years now and there's never been a time in my life where everything is perfect, you know. I lost my father 3 years ago and he should have been here for the journey. So I've got to deal with that. Everyone, and that's just me talking personally, but everybody in this room at this moment, you could be... One part of your life could be flying, and but there'll be something. It could be a family member, it could be a health issue, it could be a financial issue. There's always something, and footballers are not immune from that. And sometimes I think they fall into the trap of thinking they are, and they're not, because just because you have, you know, money or you're really good at something, life will still find a way to keep a balance in that. There'll be stuff in there that's going to be stressful, it's going to be upsetting, and you've got to just deal with that, you know.
But do you think enough people in the game understand that as well as you seem to?
I don't think anyone doesn't understand. I think, like I said, I just think we choose to ignore it. We just at times think, well, he's a footballer, he's got money, what's he got to complain about? You know.
And most weeks there are things where you're just like, yeah, that's really interesting.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I love it. I love it. You must be excited for the year ahead.
Yeah, I am. Like, it has been a real, it's given it a real, the whole thing a real boost, because you are, to be up close to someone where you're constantly learning stuff from and who you respect is, it sounds a bit corny maybe, but it does feel like a privilege to be able to see this. And for him, it's been an amazing journey, you know, because he's had to do it the hard way. It's taken him a long, long time to get here. And now everyone's just a bit like, where's he been all this time? And I think a lot of it, you know, he's Australian, and Australians in football tend to maybe not be treated with the same respect as people from some other countries. He's had to go a fairly circuitous route. He managed in Japan. He obviously managed in Australia for a while. And I think for him, he's just loving every minute of it.
I love the piece, and I'm so grateful that you took the time to chat to us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Sounds like Charlie's got a dream job. Thank you to Charlie Eccleshare from The Athletic. All of his articles that he mentioned are linked, and you'll find lots of other stuff there. If you are interested in this, like I say, we've had previous episodes on Liverpool FC, Barcelona and the All Blacks. And if you're interested in workplace culture, you can follow along and join the newsletter, and you'll see that in the show notes. I've been Bruce Daisley. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.